This is a recording of the Imago Relationships International Think Tank for July 18th, 2007. It is part one of six parts of Al Turtle's summer camp on Imago. The topic is starting a new couple, and it's the first part of that topic. And I am Al Turtle. You may see my writings at my website at www.turtlecounseling.com or email me at al@turtlecounseling.com.
This is great. Welcome, everybody.
Hi.
Hi, Al.
How are you doing? I'll take about 3 or 4 minutes while we just check with anybody else who's coming, and we're recording, and that's fine, and we're recording probably two different ways, I imagine. That's fine, too. Let's see. I got to turn on the recording for the MP3 files. And there may be some people who are listening in. In fact, there's at least one person listening in over the Internet. So before I start, does anybody want to share anything as they're coming online? Who all is here again?
It's John and Teresa from Toronto.
John and Teresa from Toronto.
We personally also benefit a lot, you know, from your materials.
Great. And from England is who?
Sue.
Hello. How you? Good afternoon.
Yep, 6 o'clock in the evening here.
Yes, good evening. Thank you for joining. We one of the reasons we were starting webcasting, trying to do webcasting, Ed and I, was so that people in time shifting places such as Australia or Europe or Israel could listen in at a later time and be comfortable about that, or could sign in through the internet and still listen without incurring a phone call.
That's great.
Has there been progress on that?
As what?
Has there been progress on the webcasting? Or
it's going on right now.
It's going on now, so we can do this on the internet now?
You actually can.
Oh, when so what is the website?
There was a link, and if you click on that link right now, you can go there and listen on the web.
So where is can you tell me the link?
Sure. The link is http://forward/forward/.
Yeah.
Then it is the word instant teleseminar. The whole word.
Is it www?
No www. Instant teleseminar.com. I can spell it INSTANT.
Yeah.
TELESEMINAR.com. /. Then you have to put a question mark in.
Yes.
No space. Event ID. EVENTID.
Event.
Equals. And then the number 428178.
Oh, it's so complicated.
And that link was in the memo I sent out. It is also, if you go to the IRI website and look under Think Tank, it's listed there.
Oh, okay.
So you can click on it there.
Okay.
This is Doug Cater from Chicago.
Hello. How's the weather in Chicago? You got hot now?
Pretty hot, yeah. Not as hot as sometimes. We've got a front coming through. It's hot and humid today.
Yeah. We've had abnormally hot for about a week and a half here, and I'm in northern Idaho, so I'm in the forest with lakes around. But we've been 100 degrees for, I don't know, a week and a half. Fortunately, we had a nice thunderstorm last night, and it kind of wetted things down.
Hi, Al. This is Sulfiati from Seattle.
Oh, yeah. Hi. How you doing? You know all about this weather out here.
I sure do. Over 100 in Seattle is pretty rare, but it was great.
You've had it for a while, though, haven't you?
Yeah. But it started raining again yesterday, so everybody relaxed.
Thank you.
And
pray for rain.
Yes.
I'm calling in Kate Komenars from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and it's cooler here.
Good. Cooler. Are you getting rain down there?
No, it's only 91.
Oh, okay.
But it's not 100.
Not 100. Yeah, but still at 91, the snakes and alligators will come out on the grass.
Hi, Al.
Assuming that they ever go away.
Who else was signing on?
Hi, this is Daphne Hubbard in Boston.
Boston, hello.
Hello.
That's my home.
Oh, is it? Oh.
I'm from Boston.
Well, I got caught in a shower, racing home to my office to hear this class. So.
It is such fun, and one of the reasons I kind of love to take a look at weather at the beginning is to really get an idea of how, in this wonderful Imago project, saving one life at a time, one marriage at a time, that we're really covering the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big spread here, and the planet is involved in this process. At least that's what it looks like to me.
And, hi, Al. It's Marilyn Hunter from Oakville, Ontario.
Hello.
Hi.
Marilyn, how you doing?
I'm fine.
Good. Good. Ontario. Ontario is mosquitoes for some reason.
Oh, Manitoba, Winnipeg really have the mosquitoes. Right now we're just hot and humid.
Oh, good. Good. I had some people call that say they were going to join from Australia, and they are 1 o'clock in the morning over there.
Oh, my.
Oh, that's dedication.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but we're recording, so they'll be able to, right at the end of the seminar, go to the same link that I gave earlier, and immediately listen to it or even download it and put it on a CD and listen in their car.
Oh, I didn't get that link.
Well,
do you have time, or is it on?
Rather than give it out, if you can check where you normally go at IRI for the think tank schedule, it's there.
Okay.
It's listed on each. There's a link for each one of the next 6 seminars.
Oh, yes. I see it now.
Just click on that and you got it.
Okay.
Now, we could also still telephone in like we've been doing.
The telephone in just like you do now.
Okay. And then how long is a particular one going to be available?
I think it's going to be available for quite some time. I can download them. There's discussion about making them available on a CD. For some nominal fee.
And
I'll be glad to do that. But let's kind of get on with it because our times are running.
Hey.
So what I'm going to do is I'm in a bit of a spot, folks. The spot I'm in is that I have at least an hour and a half to 2 hours worth of stuff right now, and I can't do it because I want to hear from you too. I picked this topic, starting a new couple, because it kind of brings everything together that I've come to learn about Imago, and it may be a place where I distinguish myself the most from other Imago therapists. I believe that as people continue their journey, and I mean therapists continue their journey, they will begin to constantly diverge from what they're taught in the original training in Imago because they are enhancing themselves. They're growing. They're learning. They're finding their own way, just like we expect couples at the end of 5 years to be mirroring in a unique way that is unique to each couple. I think Imago therapists do that, and I've been doing Imago therapy since 1993, and I have certainly gone forward, and I thought this was going to distinguish me. During my life, many times I've wondered, is what I'm doing still Imago? It's what I'm doing is what really feels best for me, and everyone else will have to decide whether it's Imago. I certainly think it is.
I do too, Al.
Who's this?
Ed Shea.
Oh, hello, Ed Shea.
I think what you do is Imago.
Okay. Ed Shea, by the way, is on and as an administrator to what we're doing. And he, if you go online and you're listening online, you can actually type in questions there, and Ed's going to field them for me so that I don't have to deal with questions while I'm making a presentation. So what I'm going to try to do is I'm going to try to wrap up my thoughts in about 30 minutes. And then I'm going to leave the last 20 minutes or so open for everybody else. That's
excellent.
My plan. My plans don't always work out. There are five more seminars set up. And I've given rough titles to those, but we may change that altogether depending upon what you people want and what I can come up with. One of the possibilities is that I may arrange an interview with Orly Warman, who's over in Israel, who's been doing this wonderful project using Communalog and Israelis and Palestinians. And we may be able to get someone to interview her in one of those calls. And it's all Imago being expressed in bringing about peace among people. Another session, I might be able to persuade one of my, a friend I have here who's in a men's group with me, who's writing a book based on my website. And it's a fantasy novel, and he's very close to finishing it and making it available to people. And we might interview him and kind of have a good time, because he talks about, it's funny stuff. It is really funny, wonderful ways to learn Imago. Now, I have a sign in front of me that says, Al, go slow, breathe, and don't rush. So I'm going to take a breath. When I approach a couple, I bring a series of assumptions to that starting place. My first assumption is that the couple is coming to me because they want something and they can't get it. The something they want is what I call the biological dream. And you can go to my website and read the details of it. But I believe they want it, and they're very frustrated because they can't get it. In fact, they're really angry because they're trying to get it. And so you have them in this wonderful state of reaching out to me, to someone, to help them get what they want and to get rid of the stuff that's troubling them, that's stopping them. So I assume that when they call, they're not only wanting something, but they're frustrated and they're angry. I assume also that they're hurt, that they've been experiencing the pain of the power struggle when they've been together, and they're feeling invalidated repeatedly from their partner. I'm assuming that they aren't coming to me because they're just starting to feel this way. I'm assuming that they've been feeling this way for a long time, and they are more or less close to splitting it, tying the knot, untying the knot, cutting up the Gordian knot, or divorcing. I assume they're considering that, and they're close. I assume that they are fighting. And I assume they're fighting either in the active form, or let's talk about the passive form for a minute. The passive form is where both of them are unhappy, but one of them is very quiet about the whole thing, and the other one is extremely frustrated. So there's a fighting going on, but it's not very active because one person is silent and withdrawing. The second form of anger, of fighting, is where they're both just arguing with each other, where they both moved out of the passive, they moved out of the passive form, and they're both struggling like heck with each other. I'm assuming that's what they're doing. And I prefer them to be arguing. It's easier to work with the arguing couple than with it is with the couple where one of them is completely passive. It's not that difficult, but it's still just easier to deal with the arguing people. And I'm assuming that their communication is pretty much collapsed, that they're both in fact voids, almost terminal fact voids about what the other person thinks, that their intimacy has gone to zero or very close to zero, that both of them don't know what's going on in the other, and that they're making up lots of stories. And of course, that assumes that both of them don't feel heard and that both of them are not feeling validated. And then the last thing I'm assuming is that probably the clinger-avoider dynamic is operating. I'm very different from Harville and Imago training on this, because where in the Imago training we talk about the clinger-avoider dynamic starting in childhood. To me, I don't care where it came from. It's going on now. And if it goes on now, it will betray the relationship and collapse it. This is the one where one person is push, 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 fix, 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 threat, 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 and the other person is saying, I'm leaving, I'm quiet, I'm not talking, I'm pulling away. I'm assuming that's going on because in my experience, that's a very clear dynamic in 85% of the people who come to me. When I say 85%, how many have I seen so far? Somewhere over 2,000 couples. So those are my assumptions. By the way, these are notes, and I put these notes on my website, and if you go to the page, the link page, you'll see a link to my notes. So you can go take a look at them. You can read them as we go along. When a couple approaches me, then, I have a goal in mind. My first goal is that they experience the biological dream in my office and in my presence. I want to make them at a visceral level feel the presence of what they want. Because I want them to say, well, Al, you can produce it, so maybe we can produce it. Very important that I create that sense that I believe the dream relationship, conscious marriage, or whatever you want to call it, is possible. In fact, I'll not only say it's possible, oh, I can do it. The second thing I want, my goal, is to create a sense of safety for both of them. Actually, that's the first critical piece in the biological dream. And I do that by setting up structure, by displaying a lot of patience, by displaying a lot of humor, and by using a lot of boundary skills. Third thing I want to do is I want to deal with the issue of what I call reliable membership, which is to head on face the issue of the avoider threatening to leave, or of the clinger scared of the avoider leaving. Doesn't make any difference which one's going on or both. It just means that they don't know they're staying together. There's the threat of divorce is in the air. I want to deal with that right away. The fourth thing, I want to deal with communication problems by, instead of continuing what they've experienced, I'm going to make them feel heard. How do I do that? I do lots of mirroring and lots of pulling. And the next thing I want to really do is give them the sense that diversity is not only permissible but encouraged. And I've learned a new phrase, which is the sounds of listening. I like that phrase, sounds of listening. This is the sound you make to let people know you're listening. It's kind of like when somebody says, I'm going to town, you say, That little is a sound of listening. Mirroring is an elaborate sound of listening. It's not taking the topic over, but it's showing that you're listening. So I want them to sense that when they show that they're different, when they show that I don't agree with my partner, I want to show that I'm listening, and I want to show them that I'm ready to understand, and that I know they make sense. So I'm using pre-validation. If I can't use validation, I'll use pre-validation. I want them to feel that. And the sixth thing I want them to feel is that the whole thing is up to them. I do not want to push them. I do not want to force them. I want them to have it thrown to their face that they are the ones choosing to come back, that no one's pushing them. And I want to make sure that's clear for both of them. So those are my goals. Okay, and I've looked at that over time. And when I put my notes up there, by the way, I put links to my papers that describe each one of these pieces. first contact I almost always get from people is a phone call. So let me speak of the phone call for a minute. Remember, my goal is that the person calling me experience the biological dream. At the same time, I want to keep it simple, the phone call, and keep it easy, because I don't want to get exhausted, because the question is, how many phone calls do you turn into sessions? I'd say I turn probably 60% of the phone calls into sessions. That's an incredible rate. But I think the trick is that they experience the biological dream and they want it so badly. And this is all unconscious I'm actually marketing myself very well. But I keep it very simple. The third thing I do is I invite them. I do not push them. Literally, if they say they want to think about it, I say, fine, go off and think about it. If they say, in no way do I push them. I tell them I want a two-hour session with them and nothing more. In fact, there was a time when I was so good with my first sessions that I would say to them, I won't even charge you for the first session unless you come back for the second. If you come for the second session, then I'll charge you for that first session. But if you don't come, there's no risk. If you don't want to come back, there's no risk. I used to do that, and I found that it didn't really make any difference to how many people I got, so I stopped doing it. But I think it works. I think it shows a positive commitment to my own confidence. Plus, I think it shows a kind of respect for their fear, their fear that they don't want to get trapped. But it certainly sets up a stage in my mind that says, I don't need these people to come to me. It's up to them if they want to. There are plenty of other people. It's a very comfortable state. Item number five in the phone call is that I mirror what they're saying, whether out loud or I just let them know I am mirroring by showing it, by saying, let me see if I've got that. And I also lightly pull, and I say lightly pull, it means that I'm not, I don't want them to talk forever. I do a lot of empathizing with a lot of compassion. And this is where my own personal experiences work. If they say they're in pain, I say, yeah, that must be awful. I kind of remember that. So I may share some of my own experiences from my past. I was divorced once. I know a lot about the pain of divorce, and people feel very comfortable if I let them know that when they're on the phone saying, by the way, this is awful, I say, yeah, I can see that. I've done it. You know, and so I'm actually not just mirroring. I'm actually, with compassion, showing that I've got some connection with that. Occasionally, I use Rick Brown's scheme. In Rick Brown's book on Imago Therapy, he devised a scheme of how to get one person to get the other to come in. I rarely do that. But if you want to look it up in his book, it's kind of an interesting little trick where you tell the person on the phone to say that the therapist wants their partner to come in. This is in that situation where the person you're talking to thinks they can't get their partner to come. So it's a strategy for dealing with that. I don't usually use that. I usually kind of really want to make it. If a partner says, how do I get my husband to come in? I say, well, threaten him. And they say, what do you mean? I say, well, tell him, you know, if in 3 or 4 months they haven't made an appointment for therapy, that you're going to split. That's quite a threat. And I'm kind of casual about that because I really want them to work out their some sort of collaborate set, or I'm willing to work with one individually, which, by the way, we'll talk about next session, next week. And the last thing I do is I want to write down their first name in my schedule book, their first name, their last name, then their partner's name, first name, then their phone number, and then that's all I need from them. And it's very important that I get the first name of the person who made the phone call. It's actually the place where I am tracking who I'm going to talk to first when this come into to session. So that when I get to my notes 2 weeks later, whenever I do, when they come in, I know who I'm going to work with first. You'll see that later, but I need that information somewhere, and by trapping it in my schedule book, I can then walk away from the phone call and completely forget about them. It's in my schedule. I know who I'm going to start with, all that sort of stuff, and I can forget about it. So it's making that phone call simple. One of the things I do is Sandra and I typically work from 11 o'clock to evening, into the evening with couples. And so typically couples call in the morning. I answer the phone a lot. And I'm amazed that when I answer a phone call, almost most of the time I end up getting a session out of it. If I don't answer the phone call, I don't think I get the session. It's that willingness to be there, because they're often saying I can't get anyone on the phone. It's that willingness to be there, and it's that willingness to let them experience the biological dream on the phone that really seems to be the thing that works. Okay, let's see where I am with my time, and see where I am with questions, or if we got any questions. I think we're okay. Let me switch off this and just pull you guys for questions. I've got 25 minutes or so into my session, so let's see. Ed, what do I do? It's a
star with star five to unmute.
Yep. There we are. So now everyone's back on the line. Does anybody have any question at this point? Before I'm going to go and cover the stuff of what I do in the first session.
Al, can you say how you deal with give them the experience of the biological dream on that in that initial phone call?
It's a complex enough conversation. You're asking how do I deal with making them feel the biological dream in the first phone call, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Actually, I've kind of covered it a little bit. Biological dream, I came up with a long time ago to describe why people go so bananas for falling in love with each other and why they fall in love with Imago. And I've written it up pretty carefully what it is, and I've, after figuring it out around 1998, I've never desired to add anything to it. It's complete. It's a nice five-piece, you know, set. The first thing I'm going to do is I want them to feel safe.
Okay.
Second thing I want to do is I want to feel that I'm there for them and I'm not pushing them away, but okay. I'm going to be there. That's why I answer the phone. I want to signal that I'm there. And when they say my partner's not there for me, I'll go, oh, gee, that's hard. So I'm dealing
okay,
with a lot
I get it.
Of membership.
I get it. Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And if they say, I disagree with you, I will send, you know, the minute you, it's really cool how pre-validation has evolved. If somebody says to me on the phone, I really don't like this. My subvocal and now vocal response, which is a listening sound, my vocal response is, of course you don't. I'm sending that sound because what I'm trying to do is set the frame that diversity is listened to here, that we're not trying to teach conformity. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah.
So that kind of thing. The same thing with autonomy. I'm always playing in that first phone call with, of course you don't have to come in. And if they say, I have to do that, I'll say, no, you don't. You don't have to do anything. You know, and he says, well, my wife may turn me in. And I say, yeah, and you may go to jail for that. Is that what you want to do?
Exactly.
So I'm actually playing with their autonomy.
I see.
I love it. I love it. I love it when we get into the physical violence stuff and you can just say to people, well, if you want to do that, you can, but you're going to end up in jail. And you're not rushing in to try to take their autonomy away from them. Does that help you?
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Any other question?
Al, I just want to mention that there are 42 people on the call.
Oh, shoot. Plus,
there are additional people on the webcast only, but on the phone, there's 42 people.
Holy mackerel. You guys are great. Oh, go for it. Think if we could let everyone else listen in.
I would like to just say hello. I came in late. This is Sue Ann from Charlotte.
Hello, Sue Ann.
Hello, Al.
Yeah, hi, everybody. Everybody, all the 42, if you all speak up now, we'll take up the next 30 minutes doing that. So you're going to have to pretend that I'm going to be delighted with all of you. Because I really would. In fact, the ones who are pissed at me would be the most excitement. Because those are the ones with diversity.
Oh, well.
I love it. I love it.
Al, just a footnote. Stephanie Brandenburg from Mount Kisco, New York, wanted to let you know that she was listening on the webcast and says hi to everybody.
Hi, Stephanie. Glad to have you here. Yeah, I saw your note before. Stephanie asked the question is, can we get CEUs somehow for this?
Mm.
And I haven't any damn idea, but it's a great idea.
It's
and I just forwarded
idea.
It off to Tim.
I think the social workers can.
There may be some way that you can get Imago credits for attending the think tank. There should be.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I have a question I have a question about the webcast. I went
yes.
to that address, the 428178, and it just was like the instant seminar space. Is there an additional thing to type in?
Ed, can you answer that?
Does it have an event number on the end of the web address that you used?
428178.
Right, and it should give you three choices of pop-up players: the Window Media Player and two other pop-up players. And if you choose one of those pop-up players, it'll take a minute to be able to get you into the sound on your computer.
Okay.
And then, of course, your speaker has to be turned on.
Gotcha.
Okay.
And that has my picture on it. I've got a different picture for each one. But if you're there, it also has a link to my notes. And it also has a link to Ed's website and things like that.
And Al, could you just mention that there'll be a recording of this available later?
Yep.
At the same address.
Just leave that same link. And when we're done in 20 minutes or whatever it is, then that same screen will convert to to something else that says the whole thing's over, and then you can replay using the Flash Player or Media Player, or you can download it as MP3 and put it on a CD and listen to it.
Al, I don't see your notes under links.
It isn't under links. It's up under the text by my picture.
Oh, okay, thanks.
You see where it says, by my picture, it says, now that you're here, let's look at the person. And it says, here are my notes.
No. Does this say Al Turtle's relationship wisdom?
No.
Oh.
No, you're
But you can get
website.
It from there. You can get it from there. You can just type
to the webcast.
Starting a couple.
Oh, yeah, you can
come
do that.
To
it's
it.
There. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
I use my website as a way of making things available for everybody. Someday I'll have to figure out how to make money out of it. Okay, let me go back and just kind of outline my first session. And then let me only go a little bit, and then I'll stop, and let's share what other people have learned. Star 5, right, Ed?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. So when they walk in the room, I want them to really experience the biological dream in my room. But I want to not do it briefly or lightly. I want to do it thoroughly. So if you look at my beginning of the session, my notes, they're pretty tight. I do exactly the same thing every time. They walk in the room, I'm looking the other way even, and I will start saying, thanks for coming, because I love having you here, because my goal is to get to your kids and grandkids, and the only way I know how to do it is to get to the parents or grandparents. And then I kind of distract them by saying, take chairs of equality. And they look a little baffled, because that's a strange phrase. But they look in my room and they see that there are two chairs that are the same kind of chair, and I may wave in that direction and they sit down. Gets a little tricky when one of them weighs 350 pounds and the other one weighs 90. But most of the time it works really smoothly. And then I say, look, one of the biggest issues in all couples is managing the issue of fairness. because you're in a dialogical relationship that either one can, I don't say dialogical, I say democratic relationship, where either of you can divorce or split at the drop of a hat. So whatever you're doing, it's got to be fair. It's got to feel fair for both. And then I said, you know, feeling fair, it's this funny concept. Fair means both people think it's fair at the same moment. It's never fair if one person thinks it's fair and the other one doesn't. You've got to have two yes votes for it to be fair. So I start you off in shares that are equal. But I want to make out the point here is that equal is not fair. And then I say a little, and they look at me kind of baffled, and I say, see, so let's say you take a chocolate milkshake and you take a watermelon and you put it on a table and you split them both in half and make cups and dishes of both equally half. You give them to my wife and I, and we both feel cheated because I don't like watermelon and she refuses to drink chocolate milk. We've got different value systems. And so we both feel cheated with fairness, or with equality, maybe. And so you can see that what would be fair in this situation is I get the whole chocolate milkshake and she gets the whole watermelon. So I just want to point out that equal isn't fair, but it's a good start. So let's just put you in chairs of equality. Now, that sets up a lot of structure in the room, and it sets up what I'm going to do throughout, because remember, and this is not in my notes, the number one reason couples come to me after having seen another therapist is because they experienced unfairness in that office with that other therapist, and I get a lot of them. I get a lot of people who've been to other therapists. I think Imago therapy is much better than most therapies out there. But I think the critical thing is that therapists often don't know how to maintain a tone of fairness in the room so that both partners think it's fair. So I focus on that, and then I say, okay, so let's go to the next, look to the next issue. The next issue for me is that both of you come in here. This is my experience. I've seen 2,000 couples. That you don't come in here because you want to be here. You come in here a little bit like going to a dentist for a root canal. You know it's going to hurt, but it's already hurting out in the parking lot and out in your house. And you're coming here thinking that maybe the hurt in this office will reduce things, will reduce the hurt at home. And I really don't want to be a dentist. And I'd like my office to be a really relaxed place, but I understand that people come in here expecting pain. And sometimes I mention the dragger-draggy phenomena at that point, that one of you is expecting more pain than the other, maybe. And then I say, I want my office to be a relaxed place, and I speak about two things. In fact, I have a sign on the wall. It says two phrases. One is predictive information. And I say, you know, one thing that makes everyone calm, relax, is having predictive information. If you know what's going to happen next, you'll relax. And if you don't know what's going to happen next, you'll get tense. It's very simple. Drive down the road at 60 miles an hour, 90 miles an hour, come around a corner, see a tunnel up ahead, and if you can see the other end of the tunnel at the same time, your blood pressure will stay down. And if you can't see the other end of the tunnel, your blood pressure will rise, and there's nothing intellectually, physically you can do to stop your blood pressure from rising. So you're going to experience me giving you predictive information, and I'm doing it because I want you to be able to relax. The second thing I say that makes people feel, I often say, that's the reason why we ask our partner, why? Why do you do that? We're trying to get predictive information so we can relax in our relationship. And I'll drop that and move on and say, the other issue is having a sense of control. If you have control, you can stand a lot of stuff. If you have no control, if you don't feel you have any control about the situation, you're going to be tense. And right now, I'd like to give you both a sense of control. So you'll see me And one of the biggest issues in a relationship is one person tries to get control at the expense of taking it away from the partner. That doesn't work. So what we're going to see, and you may have never seen it before, I want to have both of you have a sense of control in this session. So then I say to them, and I repeat, predictive information and sense of control, and you'll see me doing it during the rest of the session because I want you to be relaxed. I think it's a good way to learn. Now, that whole little presentation there takes me 4 or 5 minutes. And then I go and I say, these are the steps I use. I use 4 steps and I hold fingers up. Number one, I gather information from both of you because I want a really good picture of what we need to work on. I want to get a really, really good picture of what we, the three of us, need to work on. And this may be taking, may take up about an hour, step one, maybe longer. I say step two is I'm going to tell you what I'm seeing. And I'm going to check out my picture with you. And this is a little bit like going to McDonald's and putting in an order and they show you on the screen what your order is, because I really want to be accurate. And only you can tell me if I'm accurate, and the only way you can tell me if I'm accurate is if I tell you what I see. So step two is I'm going to tell you what I'm seeing. I don't like couples to walk out of here wondering what I think about them. I want them to not be bothered by that at all because they know what I think about them. That'll take about 15 minutes. Then I say step three is I tell you how I work, what a session looks like. That'll take 10 minutes. I might get bored. I've told it so many times. And step four is I'll answer any question that I haven't answered up to then. The truth is I want to push the questions off to the end because I'm going to probably answer them. I just find this is more efficient and I love being efficient. Push your questions off to the end so that maybe I will answer them, probably will answer them during step one or step two. Then I say those are the steps. Step one, I gather information. Step two, I repeat it to them. And then I turn to the person who made the phone call. How do I know which one? Because they're the first one on my schedule. And I say, is that okay to proceed that way? How do you feel about it? I have had 2 people in the last 4 years say no. Everyone else kind of just shrugs their shoulders and says, oh, yeah, that sounds fine. And I think there's an issue of unfairness here because I'm saying that I've done it a couple thousand times and they've only done it once or twice. So then after the first person says yes, I turn to the second person very explicitly and say, now, okay, what do you think? Are you okay with me doing it that way? And when they say yes, I say, now I've given you both predictive information and given you both control. Okay, and then I take a little bit of moment there while I dig out the piece of paper I used for taking notes in the first session. But you see, if you look at what I've done, I'm modeling almost everything in the way of making structure and order and balance and safety and setting the things up for diversity. So now watch what I do with the next piece, and then I'm going to stop because I want to let other people share. Because the biggest piece, of course, is this first, is getting the information about what you need to work on because I want to exhaust their thoughts. I want them to feel that I'm going to listen to any complaint they've got, and I'm going to look excited and pre-validate or validate it. So I'm going to pull them until they're tired, until they say, I can't think of anything else. That's why it takes 2 hours for a first session. Occasionally it runs over. So I turn to them and I say, okay, let's go with step one. I've got now 2 challenges, I say. The first thing is I want to get a really good picture of what we need to work on. And the problem I have is that I cannot ask either of you for the answer. Neither of you know the picture of what we need to work on, but each of you knows a piece of the picture. It's a bit of a pain in the neck, but there's no one in this room I can go to find what we need to work on. Now, notice what I'm doing. I'm working on diversity, and I'm working on boundaries, and I'm setting it up right there. So I say, I'm willing to take the pieces, and then I'll put it together. And I'm used to doing this so that you will experience, I say to them, when I get to step two, that I'm going to give you the whole, while in step one, I'm taking the pieces. So you may be surprised because you may never have heard the whole, but that's what I want you to check out. I want you to check out that I've got the picture of the whole. And then I say, that's my number one challenge, but I do this all the time, so it's not very hard. But the next piece I've got is, how do I decide whose piece to take first? Do I listen to you, looking at the person who made the phone call, or do I listen to you? And they usually typically at this point begin to, sometimes they point at each other. And I look at them and I say, yeah. I've learned never to pay any attention to my couples. At this point, I say that. I say it to him. I don't listen to you. If I were to flip a coin and go 50-50, that means, and I want to say to you that there is probably one of you I really, really, really want to talk to first. There is 85% of couples who come in here, I say, there is one of you I really, really want to talk to first. But right now, I don't know who they are. I can't tell by the way you're dressed who it is. But I'm probably going to know in about 30 minutes. And I'll let you know if I'm right. But if I flip a coin, I'll be right 50% of the time. That's not very good. I could start with the guy. But I found that that's about 60% right, which is not much better than 50-50. I'd like to be more right. So I've been using another scheme that I've been using since the 90s. And it's 95% accurate. I get the right person first 95% of the time. And I know I'm right because in the next session, in the session, it'll show. So I literally say to them, 5% of the time, it's flat wrong. But we'll live with that if it's there. But I'd rather go with 95% of the time. So I'm going to use that technique. By this time, they're entranced with what I'm going to do. And so I look at them and I say, I'm going to start with the person who did not make the phone call. 95% of the time, that's the right person. Now, for those of you listening on the line, 95% of the time, if there's a clinger avoider issue going on, the clinger will make the phone call. And I want to talk to the avoider. And the logic behind that simple is this. If I talk to the clinger first and pull the clinger, they will talk for 45 minutes. And when I turn to the avoider, they will say 4 or 5 sentences and I have nothing else to say. Whereas if I start with the avoider, they will talk for 30 to 40 minutes. Their partner will typically be stunned to hear how much they're talking. And then when it gets back to the clinger's turn, they will fill in some of the details, but my picture will be much better. And this just happens to be that if you take an avoider and you use good dialogical tools on them, they'll talk. Most of the time, you may have to work at it a bit, but you have to use the good dialogical tools. You just pre-validate them and validate them and mirror them and go slow. But if you let their partner talk first, the avoider will just be buried and won't talk. So once I've done that, I give them instructions. I give the partner who's not, usually this course is the clinger, but I don't know that at this point for sure. I give the clinger the instructions that they're going to be sitting for 30, 45 minutes when not being able to say a word. So I want them to go off to Mexico in their mind and sit on a beach and enjoy it and listen to a radio station that is playing this great show with their partner. I want them to listen to every word that their partner and I say, but I just want them to know there's no microphone. In other words, zip it. And once they've made that humor has kind of moved along, then I turn to the partner and say, okay, here we go. And the question I ask, and I do it to both, and now I'm not going to say any more because I've written my notes. The question I ask is, you and I could talk about anything. We could talk about fishing, hunting, or baseball, or whatever. I think that'd be a waste of time and money. I don't want to do it. So what I'd like you to do is share with me anything you can think of that is a problem in getting along with your partner. I'm going straight for every piece of negative, and I'm going to pre-validate and validate and pull every piece of negative until I've made some note about it. And then I'm going to switch to the partner and get it from the partner also. So that's basically that. I will also test communication in that. But anyway, I've made those notes there. And now I want to come back and let everybody kind of join in after hearing that, because that's quite a mouthful, and that's kind of uniquely my way. I don't think this is trained in a therapy. There, everyone should be back. So does anyone want to share their way of doing it, or their ideas, or comment on what I do, or anything like that? Let's just go for it, and we've got a lot of people on the line, so let's share. Who first? I hear some machines.
So, Al, I'm going to ask a question. This is Sulfiati, and I'm just thinking about when you open up the door to the problem, I think what I'm hearing you say is that you're really allowing for the pain to be held and to validate the diversity and so on. I'm just wondering, though, if they go into that space for, you know, 45 minutes, an hour, whatever, both taking turns, how do you get them back to feeling the biological dream after going so deeply into the pain?
Well, it's a good question. How do I deal with the pain? Usually because I'm into validation, the couples go into actually start being fairly intellectual about things. And so they start listing it as though we're putting it on paper. Rarely, but it does happen, that they suddenly get into tears or expressing emotions. And if that happens, then I may teach a little tiny bit about how to deal with expression of emotions and stuff like that. I may slow things down. But in fact, when that does happen, I think that's extremely important to take up that much of the session. You know, if one partner starts to weep, then you're literally modeling, okay, let's just stop everything for a minute. Just take your time and don't rush with that.
Right.
And you're not going into why are they crying at that point. You're just into setting up the good standard of making space for emotional expression and having good boundaries. But my general experience is that what you're trying to do is say, let's build a whole list of this stuff, and they participate with that. They won't take and when you write down the note, you know, they say, well, we argue, and I'll say, okay, you argue. That's cool. And you write down the word argue, and I say, is the problem disagreement? And they'll say, oh, God, we fight over disagreement all the time. So you write down the word disagreement. And they get a sense that what they're doing is putting, I think this is how it looks, they're putting on my paper their problem.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting it across. And so they experience me writing it down. And they don't want to take the whole session without getting everything down. They actually experience, at least what I've heard, a sense of wanting to get it all there. And I'm, of course, pulling them and saying, is anything else?
Mm-hmm.
Anything else? But I'm very often summarizing a problem. I'm not solving them. I tell them I'm not solving. I'm listing them. And I sometimes use the image that you're coming into a car repair department. You're bringing your car in. The husband and wife are bringing a car in. And I'm the car mechanic, and I want to know that the light's out, not why the light's out. I want to know that the ignition makes that kind of noise. I don't want them to talk about why the ignition makes that noise. So if they start talking more, I'll say, is this another problem or is this the same problem? Because if I've got it down, let's move on to the next one. I'm keeping it fairly intellectual in that first session, though I get stunning things happening in first sessions.
May I ask a question?
Sure.
I'd like to go back to the woman who asked about pain and the person starting to cry. What if the person pulling, you know, for you to take care of them and to, you know, stay with their pain?
Well, I think you're really good there. That's a great question. What if they're pulling for me to take care of their pain? In dealing with, as I've learned to deal with autonomy, you don't take responsibility for anybody else's pain. You leave them responsible for their pain. And so you block it a little bit. And literally, they start talking about their pain, and you say, how are you handling it? So you're inviting them to engage their own responsibility for their own pain. A pretty important thing, but it's because I've worked on this area for a long time that allows me to make that little twist. Because if they say, Al, make my life better, I'll say, gosh, don't you wish people were just there to make your life better? What have you been doing about it? And then I'll get into what their problems are about that, what their challenges are. Wouldn't it be nicer to have your partner 24 hours do it for you rather than getting me to do it? Let's see if we can figure out what all the problems are. So I basically shift from that. Sounds like you may have had challenges with people doing that. And I just want to say that as a therapist, I don't think it's our job to take care of our partner, our client's pain. I think it's our job to help them and guide them into taking care of their own pain.
From the standpoint of
quantum, that's a position of mine.
But literally playing.
I think we also do it with our partner, by the way. We're not to take care of our partner's pain. We're there to help them take care of their own pain. And we can be the assistant. Did that answer any? That whole paper I wrote on the passivity is on this topic. Good question, though.
Thank you.
And I may not have answered that question very well, but it's complex. And I'll be glad to take a whole session. If you want me to go through that issue of passivity in one of these sessions, I'll do it. Because it's awesome. Any other question? Or anybody else do differently? How do you do it? How do you approach it?
Well, I have a timing issue.
Yes.
The timing issue is some people could go on for a really long time, and there's the issue of there's a time limit at the end, speaking
yes.
of boundaries.
Yes.
How do you contain people who are going on and on and on and on and on, and you know that you're watching the clock?
Right. Right. And one thing I do is I look at if they're coming up with new items to go on the list. In fact, I actually say this to them. Is this the same item? You're saying more about the same item? And if they say, I say, well, don't do it to me. Give me that some other day. Right now, let's get all the items on here. So I'm actually interrupting them. But I'm engaging them in the process of getting a full list.
What's the opposite of, is there more about that?
I will say, is there another thing?
Mm-hmm.
So I will pull them towards more items on the list, but I won't pull them to say, that's what you do when you're with an individual. But I think what you're saying is there more about that? I think I would probably say with every couple, I will write down a word like his drinking. And someone will start talking about drinking, and I'll say, I've got that down. Have I got that one? Okay, so let's see if there's something else. So what I'm really focusing not is on solving the problem, but getting a complete list. But I want them to sense that I'm interested in everything.
This is Priscilla in New Hampshire.
Excuse me?
Butler in New Hampshire. I was wondering when you talked about at the end of the first session that you'll then tell them what you think may be going on, what the whole picture
yes.
or as close to the whole picture. You're then, I'm just making my own assumption here and wanting to check it out. You're then simply reading this list back to them.
No.
No.
No. No. In fact, I put some notes down there. I will probably list in that section. I'll say, well, what I'm seeing is two really hurt people. I saw that in the waiting room as you came in the way you were talking. Now, so I'm seeing a tragedy going on because it sounds like I got two people who are really hurt and they're almost so frustrated they're about to split. This is what I'm saying. Then I'll say, yeah, so another thing I see going on in here is there's a big trust issue. You know, and no, we don't know, we neither even trusting each other, and there shouldn't be. There's a real issue of safety. We got to fix that. I'm certainly seeing the turtle hailstorm problem going on here, and I will explain what the turtle hailstorm problem is at that point, if it's real visible. And by the way, that explanation of what is a turtle hailstorm not traps, but invites people almost more than anything. For me to say this business of clinging and pushing and avoiding is solvable God, they want to come back for that. Because they look at each other and they say, we do that. I'll talk about them having a type 2 communication problem, which almost every couple, actually every couple I've seen in the last 4 years has, which means that they listen to each other until a disagreement appears, and then they stop listening. And they will look at each other and say, we were seeing that one. So what you're really doing is using your terms, my terms, to put a label on stuff that they've experienced. I say, I got two controllers in front of me. You always get controllers. When you get controllers, you know, they're really trying to just relax. That's all a controller is somebody who's trying to figure out, not very effectively, but they're just trying to be able to relax. And controllers always marry controllers as far as I can see, so we'll have to fix that. You know, certainly my wife and I are controllers, so we kind of know that one. So I'm actually kind of giving them language, and they walk out and they say, my God, he's got an idea of what we're doing. Now, be clear that when they go out, I'm saying you don't have to come back.